you ever wondered what Amsterdam is all about? Don't just read about the culture that has accepted cannabis. Experience it firsthand with CS Travel's Sensible Amsterdam Tour with Normal. Travel to one of Europe's most beautiful cities this January for an educational and recreational visit to a city that regulates cannabis like alcohol. CS Travel has arranged an exclusive visit for reform-minded Americans that includes a private tour of some of Amsterdam's most renowned coffee shops, educational seminars with coffee shop proprietors, local law enforcement, members of the Cannabis Retailers Association, and Normal staff. Entertainment includes a special evening at the Boom Chicago Comedy Club, canal tours, visits to the city's many museums, including the world-famous Van Gogh Museum. Don't just wonder about Amsterdam, experience the beauty and freedom of this unique city firsthand with CS Travel and Normal Sensible Amsterdam Tour. Pricing information is available online at coffeeshoptravel.com. That's coffeeshoptravel.com. Or call toll-free at 800-816-1846. That's 800-816-1846. Be a sensible American. Visit Amsterdam with CS Travel and Normal this January. Call 1-800-816-1846 right now to book your trip. More information is available at normal.org. Distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular audio podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, normalaudiostash.com. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. Welcome back to Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Today, it's Friday, September 28th. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Take a moment to join us at Normal right now to help end marijuana prohibition in America. Just visit norml.org to make your donation or join Normal today. We have a great Friday audio stash for you today, folks. We'll speak with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com for our weekly update from Steve. He's got a very interesting story up there this week and a very interesting story to tell overall about his experience with U.S. soldiers and cannabis consumption. That's here today in our CelebStoner.com update. Also today, as we lead up to the Normal 2007 conference, that's happening in Los Angeles starting on October 12th, we're going to highlight some of the speeches, events, and activities that happened at last year's Normal conference in San Francisco. Many may have seen the 60 Minutes special last weekend on medical marijuana in California. Appearing in the program was dispensary owner and board of directors member at Americans for Safe Access, Don Duncan. Don spoke at last year's Normal conference, and we're going to highlight that speech here today. Next week here on the Audio Stash Monday, we'll get to our interview with Dale Garinger, the coordinator at California Normal, about the hemp farming bill and the recent raids out in California as well. Also next week, Ryan King from the Sentencing Project will discuss a new paper he co-authored with Mark Maurer regarding the incarceration rates associated with the drug war in America, which really are staggering. In this week, folks, we found out from the FBI Uniform Crime Report data on Monday. Earlier this week, we found out that a record number of Americans are being arrested for marijuana violations each year. The FBI Uniform Crime Report came out on Monday, and we have a special show for Monday. You can listen to it at normalaudiostash.com, dealing with these record numbers. Almost 830,000 of us, 830,000 Americans arrested for a marijuana violation. Almost 90% of these arrests are for simple possession, folks. That's why Normal is so important. That's why reform is so essential to America today. Make sure you join Normal. Make sure you make a donation to Normal, because it's this organization that is putting these numbers out there for policymakers, for activists, and for the media. And it's also Normal that's working towards reform. So that's why joining Normal is so important, folks. The arrest you stop out there could very well be your own. Joining is so easy, folks. All you have to do is go to normal.org for the price of a few songs that you might download off the internet, for the price of a DVD. You can be a member of Normal and be active in reform. Also in the program today, we got some great music to round out our Friday show. But let's get right into it today. We've got an important news story today from Normal. You can also pick up our Normal News weekly podcast of the weekly press release from Normal each Friday. Just go to normal.org/podcast. Let's get to our news. Idaho City to vote on multiple pot measures. Municipal voters in Haley, Idaho, will vote this November on a series of local initiatives seeking to liberalize marijuana penalties. Four separate ballot questions will appear on the November 6th ballot, including language that calls upon local police to make marijuana law enforcement their lowest priority. In recent years, voters in various cities nationwide, including Seattle, Washington, and Columbia, Missouri, have enacted similar measures. Separate ballot questions will address the use of medical cannabis and industrial hemp, as well as the regulation of marijuana for personal use. Last year, the Idaho Supreme Court ruled that citizens can vote on the issue of legalizing marijuana, even if the proposed initiative conflicts with state and federal laws. The sponsor of the initiatives, the Liberty Lobby of Ohio, is seeking to place marijuana law reform questions on the ballots in Ketchum and Sun Valley. More information about the pending ballot measures can be found at normal.org. And for more questions about this story, please contact Alan St. Pierre, Normal's Executive Director, at area code 202-483-5500. Next up today, it's time for our CelebStoner.com update with Steve Bloom.
I want to be famous. I want to wear minks and satins and pearls.
Steve Bloom has his finger on the pulse of celebrity stoners around the planet. You can read stories about famous folk who enjoy a toke and other marijuana news up at CelebStoner.com. We have links to it at NormalAudioStash.com. Steve, welcome back to the show today.
Hey, Chris. How are you?
Doing very well this fine fall Friday, Steve. There are a lot of headlines this week at CelebStoner.com, some dealing with celebs, such as Owen Wilson and O.J. Simpson's girlfriend, Christine Prodi, who had a marijuana offense arrest last year. But one story that really caught my eye was this one. Iraq war vets routinely drug tested, some discharged. And Steve, you had some very interesting interactions with U.S. soldiers who are also marijuana consumers.
Yeah, I call them the stoner soldiers. And during my time at High Times, especially when the Iraq War started in 2003, we start to hear from soldiers periodically, kind of stoner soldiers out there in the field who were sending High Times photos and reports, and you know, just connecting with the magazine. And the first time was a guy whose name is Carlos El Reliano, who went by the name Singe as a rapper, who sent us a photo of him finding a small pot plant right on the streets of Baghdad. That photo turned into a cover story on High Times Grow America when that publication existed back in 2004. So from that point on, I was particularly interested in the situation with these soldiers who are stoners, but over there, you know, probably, you know, may or may not be able to smoke while they're, you know, on the job, so to speak. And then more interesting to me has been what happens to them when they come home. You know, when they come home, one of the first things they probably want to do is smoke a joint, and they get drug tested when they come home. And so, you know, they have to be very careful. And there have been several vets that have, you know, come forth and, you know, said that they, that particular, that guy Carlos, he came back and he failed the test, and then he ended up going back to Iraq because they pretty much, you know, squeezed him, saying, well, you know, either we're going to dishonorably discharge you, or we're going to reduce the benefits that you would receive, or some way or other that they make it difficult for the soldier, and, you know, well, if you want to go back, then we'll clean your slate. So, lo and behold, you know, Carlos is back in Iraq for yet another tour of duty, which I don't know if he was particularly upset about, because he's a career soldier, and it's like, hey, he's going to go do his job. But nevertheless, you know, this was due to the fact that he failed the drug test, and there was another fellow who came through the office at High Times who told us the similar story, and he went to jail, you know, post coming home from Iraq. So, you know, it really concerns me. I think there's a story there that I haven't really been able to unearth entirely, which is, you know, what is the state of the soldiers who come home, smoke pot, get drug tested, and how many of them are getting, you know, discharged or getting, you know, reduced benefits or some sort of punishment. So anyway, this week a story broke about a soldier named Josh Gaines, who was a Army reservist who served in 2004-2005, who is opposed to the war and has decided to give back his medals. He received several, you know, medals, a National Defense Service Medal and another medal. He's going to give them back to, of all people, Donald Rumsfeld, who's making an appearance in Madison, Wisconsin on October 3rd, and Josh lives in Madison. And so he made kind of like some headlines on publications such as Army Times. That's where the story broke. And but he also stated that he was discharged because he had started smoking marijuana after he returned from Iraq to help him eat and sleep. And he was having trouble doing that. I guess he was suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And so he received what he called an other-than-honorable discharge after failing a drug test. So that led me to the next step, which a soldier, one of the last soldiers I had contact with, and I've kept in contact with since he came home, is a fellow named Skyler Krupp. And Skyler sent me a lot of correspondence with him when he was still in Iraq. He is a special forces guy who served from 2002 to 2006. So he's been back home since, you know, 2006 or, you know, late in that year. And he's just been in touch with me lately, and I've asked him a few questions about this issue of drug testing and among soldiers when they come home. And his point of view about all of this was that, yes, they do get drug tested, but the problem with a lot of the soldiers, they don't know how to beat the test. And Skyler's a pretty smart guy. He's a reader of the magazine, and he, you know, is familiar with the drug test solutions that are advertised in the magazine. So I guess what he's done, you know, to, you know, not get caught was always to be prepared, you know, by beating the test, by using the products that he says that a lot of the guys, he says most soldiers don't want to spend money on expensive drinks and flushing systems, and they think they're smarter than the Army and know, you know, when to do what. But then he went on to say that, you know, to be honest, I would say 90% of all soldiers are straight shooters. They follow Army doctrine to the T. They don't risk it due to the possibility of losing rank and pay and or their career. Though he says he hasn't heard of soldiers being sent back due to failing a drug test, although he says it's possible. In his case, since he was in special forces, he says he got sort of like a little more lenient treatment, that they kind of let things go a little bit more. And matter of fact, they would sort of like lighten up on the drug test. In other words, they'd let them know in advance when they're having a drug test so that they could beat it, because they were kind of trying to protect their special forces guys. Now, he says, now with regular units, I know for a fact that they did urinalysis tests constantly. They were even administering piss tests in the field. I mean, giving whole units, thousands of soldiers, urinalysis tests in Iraq. I always thought that that was ridiculous. Isn't there more important stuff to worry about, like maybe finding better ways to protect soldiers? And then he says, here's the kicker. Believe it or not, pot is not the most widely used drug in the Army. It was always cocaine, and in a close second came heroin. Pot just stays in your system for too long. So, you know, Skyler's information is very, very revealing. And, you know, he says there's a lot of drug use and a lot of antics that goes on before they go over to Iraq. And then once they're over there, it's a little harder to, you know, come by. Marijuana is not grown, you know, in Iraq, although hash is available, but it takes, you know, a lot to acquire it, and you have to sort of go off base. You have to, you know, deal with, you know, shady characters, and a lot of the soldiers are pretty afraid of getting too involved with the locals in that way. So they kind of like keep to themselves, and maybe something comes their way. But, you know, but when they come home is the problem. They really want to kind of celebrate their return. They want to smoke a joint, and then they get in trouble for it.
Very interesting angle there, Steve. I hope we can talk more about this subject in the future. Also at CelebStoner.com is a story that's been widely reported in sports and mainstream news, and that was the Michael Vick positive marijuana test story out this week. It does seem a little funny that this single drug test would get so much media.
Well, the thing about Michael Vick, I mean, is that, you know, before, you know, all this, you know, terrible news broke about, you know, the dog fighting and the cruelty and the killing of the animals and stuff that he's been, you know, accused of and, you know, admitted to, Michael Vick had, you know, other sort of problems that were developing of during last season, where he gave the finger to the crowd at a game, and you know, which is something you just don't do, even if people are booing you. And then he had that kind of infamous encounter with security guards at the Miami airport, where he had a stash bottle that was, you know, that some stoners use to, you know, to keep their pot in, that kind of looks like, say, an Aquafina bottle or something like that. And he had that in his possession. And, you know, as you know, when you go onto planes these days, you're not allowed to take a water bottle. So he was trying to take this stash water bottle onto a plane, and they basically took it from him and said, no, you can't have that. And he gave a real squawk about it. Hey, I want this. This is mine. You can't have it, kind of thing. And they, you know, kind of, they threw it in the garbage, and they kind of were why was he so emphatic about this? So they, you know, one of the security people, you know, took a look at it and found that it had a false bottom. And in the false bottom, there was no marijuana, but there was kind of like a residue, and there was a smell that they picked up, and they arrested him for it. Now, that was dropped, that case, because ultimately, you can't arrest somebody for the smell of marijuana. I mean, at least not yet. But you can, you know, but there was the belief that there was probably marijuana in that container at some point in time. And so, you know, they had to dismiss the case because they didn't really have enough evidence. But that kind of indicated to you that, in addition to everything else, Michael Vick's a pot smoker, and he was trying to hide his stash. And now, you know, he's smoking, you know, when he shouldn't be. Now, I don't take the side that a lot of the media is taking, that it's a horrible thing that he's smoking pot. That's the least of it right now. You know, I don't really care. You know, go smoke pot. But the fact is, the matter is that Vick's not too smart, because he's getting drug tested. So, you know, again, he's not doing, you know, what a lot of the soldiers should be doing, you know, finding a way to get around, you know, getting caught. You know, use a product that might help you mask, you know, if you're going to use marijuana. So it's just another indication that, you know, Vic's just not on the ball.
And Steve, you also highlighted the story of the record number of marijuana arrests in 2006, originally reported by Normal on Monday. This is just a shocking amount of Americans arrested for marijuana offenses now.
Well, the number has increased to 829,625, to be exact, for the year 2006 in all of the United States. That's the number of marijuana violations or arrests that were compiled by the FBI. Now, that figure is yet another increase. Every year it goes up. I mean, it has not gone down probably ever, but, you know, but maybe it did, you know, I don't know what the numbers were from the 70s into the 80s. Maybe there was some sort of decline, but certainly, you know, through the 90s, it's gone up, 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 and up. And that was, you know, someone like Bill Clinton, who says that he favored decriminalization, you know, maybe in his heart, but didn't really do anything, you know, for real, you know, to make a difference while he was president during those 8 years. You know, the numbers went up considerably during his time when he was in office. And, you know, no surprise, you know, during the Bush, you know, this Bush years, you know, the 8 years of G.W. Bush, you know, it's continuing to go up. So, I mean, I have to say, it's no surprise. You don't expect it to go down, you know, with the Republicans in office, and it went up with the Democrats in office. So nothing seems to stem the tide of marijuana arrests. I mean, the way things are going, you know, within the next, you know, 5 years, it's going to be over a million people arrested for marijuana in the U.S., which is just insane. You know, I mean, anybody out there who's listening to this show, you know, you just got to shake your head and go, what is going on in this country? Why is there such a focus on marijuana arresting? Well, marijuana smokers are easy targets. You know, pot smells pretty, you know, prevalently. The aroma is hard to mask. People get arrested in cars constantly. I mean, that's probably the easiest place to get picked off by police because they don't have to have a search warrant to go into your vehicle. I mean, you get pulled over for speeding or any other kind of violation, and you had been smoking in that vehicle, good luck because you're in trouble because they're going to sniff it out. It's pretty hard not to smell the aroma of marijuana if it's been used very recently. And they're going to pull you out of the car, and they're going to take you through, you know, a search, and they're going to find it most likely, and they're going to put you, you know, either in jail or they're going to give you a ticket and they'll let you go, and then you're going to have to go through the court system. So, you know, the police are very well aware of this. This is the way that they get their arrest totals up. They go after the potheads. You know, it's a lot easier to get the pothead because the smoke, the smell, and everything else, you know, is so easy to detect. So, you know, that's unfortunate. So what we as smokers have to do is we have to, you know, protect ourselves. You know, we have to do things that, you know, be much more careful on the road. I think, you know, people in cars, they just have to be so much more careful about smoking in vehicles. Furthermore, your car's got to be in great shape. You can't have any type of problems with the vehicle, lights out, make bad turns. I mean, how many arrests do I always see? And a lot of them are celebrity arrests, but nevertheless, it's because somebody, you know, this week, even though it wasn't a marijuana arrest, Kiefer Sutherland was arrested for a DUI. Why? Because he made an illegal U-turn. So they pulled him over for that. Well, he wasn't smoking pot, but he was under the influence of alcohol, and they got him for that. So if he hadn't made the U-turn, which probably in this case is probably good because you want to get, you know, drunk drivers off the road, but nevertheless, you know, that's how people get popped more and more and more. It's not so much in your home. I mean, in New York, a lot of people get popped on the street because of the, you know, the program that was started by Rudolph Giuliani during his years to go after smokers who are kind of stepping outside of a bar and wanting to just, you know, light up a little bit because you can't inside. So you're kind of sitting ducks out in the street. And so they get a lot of people in New York and probably, you know, other cities around the country as well, though it's more well known these days in New York that that's what the police do. So you have to protect yourself. I mean, you know, I suggest things like, you know, make sure you have EasyPass when you're driving in a car. Don't go through tolls, you know, where you're going to pull down your window and you have to pay some money and you might have the smell of marijuana in the vehicle. I mean, I'm not going to tell people don't smoke in your car. You know, I'm not going to be, you know, the teetotaler. I'm not going to be the goody-goody when it comes to that. You know, do what you want to do, but just protect yourself and be careful and don't put yourself in a situation where you can get arrested. And this is what's happening in this country. That's why these tolls are so high. The tolls are high because the government continues its insane campaign against marijuana, and sooner or later that's going to end, but for the time being it's still going, and because people are not protecting themselves the way they should, and they need to do that if they're not going to get arrested and keep the numbers down instead of allowing them to increase.
Righto, Steve. Well, thank you again for joining us this week here on the Audio Stash. Looking forward to speaking with you again next Friday.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks again, Steve. Steve Bloom has his finger on the pulse of celebrity stoners around the planet. He posts Celeb Stoner News along with marijuana news at celebstoner.com. We have links to it at normalaudiostash.com. Steve joins us here each Friday. Stay tuned. Coming up next today is some highlights of the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. Today we're going to play Don Duncan's talk at the 2006 conference. By the way, folks, you can still register for the 2007 Normal Conference taking place on October 12th and 13th in Los Angeles. On October 14th, the High Times will present the Stony Awards in Los Angeles at the Knitting Factory, and you can buy a package with tickets to all of it right up at normal.org. We, of course, also have a link at normalaudiostash.com. Folks, the 2007 conference is filled with some really amazing presenters this year, and the Stony Awards look like there are going to be some wonderful musical performances. I know the MC is going to be Tommy Chong. It's going to be a great, great experience all the way around in Los Angeles in just a few weeks. A 2006 Normal Conference highlight coming up next.
You're listening to Normal's Daily Audio Stash.
Here on the program today, we're going to highlight a piece of audio from the Normal 2006 conference. Here's Don Duncan. He's a dispensary owner and on the board of directors for Americans for Safe Access. Don was featured in a recent 60 Minutes piece that aired on Sunday of last week regarding medical marijuana dispensaries in California. The 2007 Normal Conference, again, folks, is coming up very soon. You can register online at norml.org. Here's Don Duncan.
Good morning. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you to the other panelists as well for such good information. My name is Don Duncan. I'm on the board of directors of Americans for Safe Access, and I'm also a part of the team that operates three medical cannabis dispensing collectives here in California, one in Berkeley, one in West Hollywood, and one just now opened in the heart of Hollywood in Los Angeles itself. In that capacity, with ASIN as a dispensary operator, I've had the opportunity to work with cities and counties all over the state of California on implementation issues, and I can tell you across the state, local governments are grappling with what to do with medical cannabis dispensaries. It's unprecedented in American law how to handle an institution that is illegal under federal law, is very vaguely legal under state law, and has no local guidelines whatsoever to start with. I am happy to say that if you can measure the success of Proposition 215 and of our medical cannabis movement here in California by the expansion of safe access, then it's been a tremendous success. We've gone from one dispensary in San Francisco to over 200 statewide. And I'm especially encouraged that we're seeing now a long-awaited proliferation of dispensaries in Southern California, in Los Angeles, in the Inland Empire east of Los Angeles County, even in San Diego, which is arguably the most hostile jurisdiction in the state of California for medical cannabis right now. And that's encouraging. I remember for the longest time there were only dispensaries in Northern California, and it seemed like L.A. never would come along. And now it feels crowded in L.A., and so I think that's a tremendous success. And I don't just mean the traffic either. There are several reasons. In fact, there may be a whole range of reasons why dispensaries are proliferating so quickly. And perhaps the most important is that it's just an idea whose time has come. You know, it's time in this process for those dispensaries. But, of course, the factor that's driving in the Southern California and the rural expansion of patients is the increase in the number of new patients in California. We have perhaps 100,000 patients. Estimates vary. At the conference in Santa Barbara 2 weeks ago, there was an estimate of somewhere between 130 and 338,000 patients in California, only about 25% of whom actually have safe access to medical cannabis at this time. And so that huge increase in the number of patients is driving the proliferation of dispensaries in areas where previously the communities were not so supportive. There's also other factors that I think are relevant to the capacity of the dispensaries to serve their patients. And one, I think, is a dissatisfaction. And I don't necessarily mean that in the harshest sense of the word, but a dissatisfaction amongst the patients with what they have. There are some dispensaries, some patients who are dissatisfied with the services and with the medicine that they can find at the dispensaries, and that will often lead them to strike out on their own. And one of the exciting trends we're seeing right now is that individual patients, previously people receiving services, are getting educated, they're getting motivated, and opening their own dispensaries. And that is exactly, it's a wonderful step forward. I actually talk to at least three or four people every week who want to do that. And we've come now to the point where some of those people have actually opened up and are operating, and now they are helping to train new dispensary operators from their patient base to open new dispensaries. And that is grassroots organizing in its purest form, I think, is people just going out and taking the initiative and doing it. Of course, also driving that proliferation of dispensaries is financial opportunity, and that's both real financial opportunity and perceived financial opportunity. There's a common misconception that anyone who opens up their doors as a dispensary will, of course, be a millionaire by the next week, and that is not the case. And yet, there is medical cannabis is a growth industry in California right now. There are people making a lot of money at it, and that perception of financial opportunity, I think, is also driving the new dispensaries to open, especially in these areas where traditionally they've been less welcome. So the good news about this proliferation of dispensaries is that having new dispensaries open, over 200 and growing here in California, remember those are only the 219 that we know about. There are plenty more that we don't know about yet. This means that we're taking medical cannabis in Proposition 215 and making it a reality every single day in the lives of tens of thousands of patients. That's no small thing. California's medical cannabis law is not theoretical or hypothetical. It's real every day in the patient's lives. And that's something to be proud of, and it's something to strive for in the other states. I know we're seeing inklings of that all up and down the West Coast, in Colorado, and even on the East Coast now. And I think it's a trend we should encourage and support, because those new dispensaries in the other states are going to bring that same safe access and that same reality to those patients, and they're going to take the heat off California, and we could really use that. Now, the bad news about this proliferation of dispensaries is that as the number of dispensaries grows, the challenges facing the local communities, the city councils, and the boards of supervisors are also going to grow. And with the proliferation of dispensaries comes a proliferation of non-compliant and perhaps less desirable dispensaries as well. Sometimes this is the result of ignorance about how best to operate, and sometimes just carelessness. But locals, cities, and counties are now dealing with the issue of how to regulate their dispensing collectives and cooperatives. And they're not going to get any leadership from Sacramento on this issue. And so city by city and county by county, we're going to have to sort that out in a way that's relevant for those communities, that respects the values of those communities, and hopefully in a way that actually protects the patients as well as the neighborhoods in dealing with medical cannabis. The problem with dispensaries that are raising concerns and generating controversy in their community isn't just for the immediate neighbors. The perception that dispensaries are problematic and that they bring criminal activity and nuisance behavior into neighborhoods jeopardizes the credibility of our medical cannabis movement here in California. And it's very, very important for these dispensaries to be good neighbors and good citizens in their communities so that we can facilitate this growth and safe access. The concern that local governments have when I talk to them, the city councils and the boards of supervisors, are not about the big issues. They're not concerned about the Supreme Court case. They're curious, but they're not really hung up on it. They're not concerned about federal law and the larger issues of ethics or morals around self-medication. They're worried about smoking outside. They're worried about litter and graffiti and parking and the other kind of nuisance activities that cause their constituents to call and complain about medical cannabis dispensaries. And what we need to focus on in regulation, I think, is the nuts and bolts operation that is going to make these dispensaries good neighbors and be sure to protect that safe access. There are two aspects, and of course, I could go on all day. I'm just going to focus on two aspects of medical cannabis dispensing collectives that I think would go a long way to shoring up that credibility and preventing that kind of nuisance behavior that leads to complaints and to problems in communities. One is the organization of the dispensaries themselves, their sort of legal or structural organization, and the other is what I call the good neighbor policy. Under our state law, there's no explicit protection for a medical cannabis dispensary. It was not anticipated under Proposition 215, or at least it wasn't addressed under Proposition 215, and it's absent from SB 420 explicitly. However, SB 420 does make a space for collectives and cooperatives of patients, and it's a small step from the collective and cooperative of patients to the dispensing collective, where a group of patients and caregivers join together to produce medical cannabis, to package it, to label it, and to provide it back. And in that model, patients would provide to that dispensing collective their excess medication, which would then be provided to the other members who cannot or will not grow their own medicine. And that model that is membership-based and exclusively supplied by patients and caregivers who are members, I think is one that makes local government and neighbors very comfortable. They don't like the idea of Walmarts of cannabis. They're uncomfortable with that. But the idea of a group of patients working together as a closed circuit, isolated from the illicit market, seems to satisfy the mandates of SB 420 and allay the concerns of consumers. You'll find on the front chairs here, I've put out some information. One of the things we've had to do is define what a dispensing collective is under SB 420. And this is a work in progress. The information you'll find on this page about medical cannabis dispensing collectives was adapted from a return of property motion filed in a case with a LA dispensary that was shut down. And the attorneys set out to identify what a collective or cooperative was in terms of state law. This very wordy and not terribly elegant adaptation of that return of property motion talks about a collective in which this is made up entirely of patients and caregivers that's membership-based with a closed membership just to their registered members where all the supply is internal. And that, I believe, is the sort of legal organization that's going to lead us forward and allay those concerns, at least until the time that there can be some meaningful regulation from the state government or a significant change in federal government. I hope you'll have a look at that. It's not a finished document. That's a work in progress. And so any feedback that you guys can provide on that, I am very eager to have. You'll find contact information at the bottom. Besides being legitimately organized, though, I think we have a behavioral issue that's perhaps even more significant with dispensing collectives and cooperatives. And that is what we talk about as our good neighbor policy. You're going to find down at the front as well a very short booklet called Medical Cannabis in Our Community. This booklet was developed to talk to neighbors about dispensaries because we were finding that the same questions come up again and again. What is a dispensary? Who are the patients? Are they safe and are they legal? And that's what this booklet deals with. It's a layman's discussion, and it is really only the starting point of a conversation, not an authoritative treatise. But I want to talk just briefly about the good neighbor policy, which I think is so important because virtually all of the problems that I have witnessed in dispensaries in California were not from federal law, but from local complaints. And unfortunately, some of those local complaints, because of the values and the policies of local police departments, turned into problems with the federal government when the local law enforcement would contact the DEA and bring them into bust a dispensary because they didn't feel like they had the tools available to deal with the complaints they were getting. A good neighbor policy, I think, starts with that legal integrity, being legally organized, restricting your membership only to those who are qualified, and taking very real steps to prevent diversion. We can't just pay lip service to legitimacy. We have to be sure that as the dispensaries operate, they are only providing medicine to their members and that they are not allowing, through lack of oversight, members to divert medicine into the illicit market. Whether or not, you know, I personally wish there were no illicit market. If cannabis could just be legal, then, of course, that wouldn't be an issue. But until it is, we have to have a line, I think, over which dispensaries do not cross.
That was Don Duncan at the 2006 Normal Conference in San Francisco. The 2007 conference is coming up in just a couple of weeks. It starts on October 12th. You can still register online for the conference and get a package deal to the High Times Stony Awards at the Knitting Factory in Los Angeles on October 14th. It's all online at normalaudiostash.com and directly at norml.org. We'll have more highlights of the 2006 conference next week here on the Audio Stash, and we'll have full coverage of the 2007 conference as well.
What's up, guys? This is Ms. High Times 2007, and you're chilling with us here at the Normal Podcast.
Next up today, I'd like to play a really wonderful song by musician Keller Williams. He gave us special permission to play this in our 420 podcast and here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. And whenever I have a week like this where you see that 830,000 Americans are arrested, it's a song like this that can really inspire me to redouble my efforts for reform. Here's Keller Williams in a live performance of It's a Plant.
It's a plant, but it can't grow freely, at least not in this space and time. Or can we begin? Shouldn't it be a sin? You're fighting against the soldiers of sense that brings a peace to my mind. Peace to my mind. Oh, why is it a crime? It's against the law, and I hope this freeze will thaw before I die from this space and time. And the politics, the folks who the nation picks, are they high? I'm afraid to try. They're afraid to try. Oh, why is it a crime? But whatever you do, we can make sure it's the right thing for you. But if you pass, please allow us to roll around in the grass, because it's time. It's 420. 24/7, 365, and the nation's debt makes the man upset. We know that they know that the answer is in this space and time. Create work, just fly the fucking dirt. Medicine clothes and the paper makes my head feel so fine. My head feels so fine. Oh, why is it a crime? But whatever you do, you make sure it's the right thing for you. But if you pass, please allow us to roll around in the grass, because it's time, it's 420, 24-7. 365. Well, is it meant to be? Is it that far away from reality? Open up the world's mind and free the kind. It can lube the cars, mellow out the bars, make room in jail for the killers in this time. Because it's just the plan, but it can't grow freely.
That was Keller Williams in a live performance of It's a Plant. They gave us special permission to use that here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Last time we heard it here was in our 420 podcast. You can download all of our past shows in our archive and on iTunes. Check out normalaudiostash.com to find the links. Many thanks again to Keller Williams and his management company for giving us permission to use that track. We have links to Keller Williams and his iTunes page right up on our website at normalaudiostash.com. This has been Normal's Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Visit our website at normalaudiostash.com. If you listen to the Audio Stash, vote for us at Podcast Alley or other podcast directory services. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Thanks for listening today. Everyone have a fun summer weekend out there, and we're back at 4:20 on Monday. The podcasting technology of Normal is made possible by Red Aphid Interactive Media. More information at redaphid.com.